Welcome to the CDH podcast. My name is Andy Besaidnet and I'm a director in CDH's employment law practice. Today I am joined by Leila Musa, a senior associate in our employment law practice. Hi Leila, and thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Andy, and welcome to all our listeners.
So today, Leila and I will be discussing an employment-related concept which has gained traction internationally, and that's the right to disconnect. Countries like France, Belgium, Portugal, Italy, Kenya, and most recently Australia have adopted this right or policy approach. And in fact, Australia's right to disconnect for a small business employer and their employees is about to come into effect on 26 August 2025. So to start, Leila, can you maybe explain to our listeners what exactly is meant by the right to disconnect?
Thanks, Andy. So I think the starting point is to note that there is not a right or a law in South African law, but rather just a policy discussion based on what we're seeing internationally. So essentially, the right to disconnect or the right to disconnect from work-related communication outside of working hours provides employees with a legal or a policy basis to not perform work outside of their normal working hours. And it also prohibits employers from penalizing employees who do refuse to attend work or to attend to work-related communication or similar outside of those hours.
What is the basis for this right? And why do you think it's being adopted internationally?
So I think most of us are quite aware that it's become customary to send or to check emails or text messages or receive phone calls outside of what we would consider as ordinary working hours. And I think a big part of this is that technology has infiltrated the workplace in a way where essentially our digital communication channels are always on or enable us to be on all the time. Many companies have turned to remote working strategies to allow for the kind of agility that was needed. And what this has resulted in is us seeing an overlap between work and home life that is something that's really infiltrating our workplace. I think this has also resulted in an increased expectation that employees will work or at least remain available for work commitments. And I think for this reason, these topics around the right to disconnect has been adopted to protect the employees' physical and their mental well-being, and to also encourage healthy working relationships in circumstances where employees are working beyond regular working hours without any kind of compensatory measures in place or proper consideration of the obligations that people may have in their personal and social lives, as well as the demands on their health.
One purpose that you mentioned is protecting the well-being of employees, and our best protection is set out in the Basic Conditions of Employment Act, right? But can you explain this further with reference to the South African context?
So there is a general requirement, as you say, in terms of the Basic Conditions of Employment Act. These are minimum standards of employment. And that basic requirement stipulates that employers must regulate working time with due regard to health and safety on the one hand, and also the family responsibilities of the employees. I mean, we're all aware that long working hours can contribute to burnout and related struggles, stress, anxiety, isolation, and other medical disorders. So it's quite important for employers to consider how they can protect employee health and safety in this regard. And I think women, who are in many cases responsible for domestic and childcare tasks, seem to be disproportionately affected by burnout. We see this in our general statistics. So it's not only from a labor law perspective, but also when we're looking at concepts like what substantive equality means, it really must be a priority for employers to think about how they can protect the well-being of all of their employees.
It's an interesting point, Leila. So you mentioned the Basic Conditions of Employment Act, but does South African law regulate this right to disconnect yet?
So the short answer is no. There's no specific regulation of that right, other than this general provision that I mentioned earlier. So the Code of Good Practice on the Arrangement of Working Time as well, in terms of BSCA, does regulate what we deem to be ordinary hours of work. And there, the maximum number of normal or ordinary hours would be 45 hours per week. And then any working hours thereafter would be regarded as overtime, which also has a cap of around 10 hours per week. But what's critical is that these minimum conditions only apply to those employees who earn below the earnings threshold that's determined by the Minister of Employment and Labour. And at present, that's set at around 260,000 rand per annum. And what that means is that the working hours of the employees who earn above that threshold will be determined by whatever agreement or policy they have with their employer. So as an example, you'll see managerial employees who have regular working hours in their employment contract. So core hours, usually, that's what it's referred to. But then there may also be a contractual requirement that, you know, those employees work as many hours as is necessary to fulfill their employment duties and to meet the employer's operational requirements.
That's interesting because the Basic Conditions of Employment Act, to a certain extent, already protect certain categories of employees, right? So it also protects employees during pregnancy and after the birth of their child, or employees that are breastfeeding, acknowledging that there may be health and safety considerations that include that they may be more tired during pregnancy, and as such, employers should consider their ability to work overtime or even morning shifts, for example. But those considerations haven't come into play for the general workforce. And with these existing policy considerations in mind, do you think there's any indication that the right to disconnect would be incorporated into our law?
I think what we're seeing from a trend perspective internationally may result in these discussions being had in South African workplaces, and particularly for those employers who operate cross jurisdiction and who are looking to be employers of choice on sort of an international or global scale. But in terms of actual discussions that we're seeing that may flow towards our legislature, there is nothing formal in place. That said, I think given the operational demands that we have on many of our employers, and that particularly those who operate in 24/7 models, having this blanket prohibition on communications outside of specific working hours is not likely to be a viable solution.
I would tend to agree. Employees would likely benefit from guidance on what their employers expect from them on this issue. And they would also benefit about an awareness of their employees' expectations the other way around. What comes to mind for me with this right to disconnect is, to a certain extent, if you grant a right to disconnect to your employees, then similarly, that would come with certain consequences, right? Because employers have a right to expect you to be available depending on certain levels that you operate in within an organization. And the right to be connected, to me, is very much linked in corporate environments specifically to the right to flexibility. I don't think you can have total flexibility without some commitment to stay connected in some form or another. But that being said, are there any challenges that you foresee with this right to disconnect?
I think that's probably one of the biggest challenges, is that we don't have a uniform workforce. So we've got a large set of our workforce that is working in industry, agricultural sector, etc., where we may have more fixed hours, even if it is on a shift basis. But then we've got levels of our industry, perhaps more of what would have previously been termed as white collar, or, you know, within your more commercial or corporate spaces, where there is, you know, a need, and professional services is a good example of that, to have flexibility in order to service the needs of the business and to service the needs of clients. And I think with that, it may be quite difficult, not only given the nature of what the employer does and what its operational requirements are, but also as employee seniority increases and as people are, you know, being compensated for what may be risk factors, what may be, you know, typically considered as nuisance factors on time and flexibility. Those things need to be taken into account as to how we would regulate. At what point one can then draw a boundary and say, well, this is outside of what are my typical working hours.
I assume that would also be many sectors. I mean, that goes to what you said, the varying workforces, where this may just not be practical. So sectors that require you, when you're at work or on standby, to remain contactable at all times, that just makes sense in some instances. Leila, what about international jurisdictions? How have they approached this right?
So you spoke about Australia earlier. There, employees can actually refuse to monitor, to read, respond, or contact, or even, you know, deal with attempted contact outside of their ordinary working hours, unless doing so would be unreasonable. So it's got that sort of exception standing. And here, Australia has determined, or at least from the information that's available to us, a list of factors which can be considered in determining whether the employer's conduct is unreasonable. And these factors include, you know, why are you contacting the employee, how you are contacting them, and how disruptive that contact is for the employee, how much the employee is compensated. So again, financial thresholds come into play here, or whether they are paid extra for that flexibility being available or working additional hours outside of ordinary hours of work. And that's our overtime concept. And then also the employee's role in the business and level of responsibility. And lastly, personal circumstances, including, you know, family and other care responsibilities. But with all of that in mind, there's also that proviso that they've put in place that it's unreasonable for an employee to refuse to do, you know, read, monitor, respond the contact if that contact is something that's required by law. So always that carve out for things that are mandated and required perhaps by law or statute or some other regulation that permeates the employer's workforce.
This is obviously my view, but these list of reasons or justifications are quite broad, right? I can see almost any instance being categorized into one of these five for why you needed to contact someone or why you can't be penalized for trying to contact an employee. But be that as it may, is there some practical advice that you could offer to our listeners in relation to this right or policy rather?
So I think in keeping with what we are seeing as internationally relevant conversations, employers would do quite well in South Africa to take proactive steps to consider what its policy position is on contact outside of what would be core working hours. And in doing so, ensure that they're actually speaking about and outlining the expectations regarding work or work-related communication outside of those hours. And while doing this, noting health and safety obligations, family responsibility, etc., and thinking about how that can be worked together to ensure that it's something that's attractive for both the employees and for the employers, particularly, you know, where they're looking to align with international best practice. And I think that would also do employers quite well in South Africa in the event that we do see any kind of policy integration or potential right to disconnect in our law in the future.
Thanks, Leila. Thank you for joining me. And also thank you to our listeners. And we hope you found this helpful and as insightful as we have. And we'll keep an eye on this topic and let you know if there have been any updates.
The views and information expressed are those of the contributors at the time of publication and do not necessarily present those of the firm. All content is provided for general purposes only and does not constitute legal advice. We make no representations, warranties, or guarantees, whether expressed or implied, that the content on our podcast is accurate, complete, up-to-date, or reflects the current law. We accept no responsibility for any loss or damage, whether direct or consequential, arising from reliance on the information which is presented here.